As the tent's house lights went up and the carny intermission began, the companions rose to their feet. So far, there were no obvious signs of danger. Yet Ryan could whiff it, like the scent of a miles-distant cook fire riding on the wind. Only about half of the carny folk were visible and directly involved in the performance. What the rest of the chillers were doing, he could only guess. When he studied the roustabouts as they stared at the milling audience, he saw both contempt and glee on their faces. The carnies thought they knew what was going to happen to every person inside the tent. They delighted in that secret, terrible knowledge.
Sometimes I hate this fucking place.
You always hate it, lover.
Yeah, you're right, Christy. Look, you and Mildred, as soon as the show starts, move for the exit. No matter what else happens, you two have got to keep it open.
Got it.
There may be other escape routes for the carny folk, secret ways out that we don't know about.
Makes sense. It means that you're gonna have to clear the way inside and outside the tent. Otherwise, they'll just chill us with blasters as we come through the exit.
Maybe Jack should come with us then.
Ryan looked at the albino, who was staring in the direction of the lion's cage, which was outside the tent.
No. We're gonna have our hands full in here when the shooting starts. Can't do the job with less than four blasters.
Some of the villagers ain't gonna make it to the exit. One way or another, innocent blood's gonna flow.
Better some than all.
Way better.
Ryan swept his one eye over the assembled crowd, their joyful faces, their anticipation of even more spectacular events to come. As they took their seats on the ground, some glanced at the windowless, rubber-coated walls of the tent without really seeing them, without understanding the implications of airtight. They had no clue that this was meant to be their death chamber.
Stay together, people. Stick to the plan, and we'll all get out.
The magnificent Krekka and his pet Sticky once again entered the ring.
I trust you all enjoyed our first act. Well, the second act of our show is even better. Without further ado, I give you the ever-popular, always satisfying Deathlands Last Man Standing! You all know the rules. No closed fists, no bared claws. Biting's always optional.
Over the years, Ryan and JB had seen versions of this particular entertainment many times over. Troops of professional hand-to-hand fighters toured the larger gaudies along the main trade routes, giving exhibition bouts and offering paying spectators the chance to bet on the outcomes. What made this particular bout different were the combatants' gene pools. It wasn't norm against norm or muty versus muty as was usual, but norm against muty. The first bout featured a giant of a man with a shaved head and spiraling concentric brandings over his shoulders and upper back, the raised welts like an angry red shawl. His mutant opponent was a head shorter, but is powerfully built. He was completely hairless. Cascading down the back of his skull and along the ridge of his spine were thousands of pale, 6-inch-long, tentacle-like growths. The individual dermal villi moved in response to stimuli, rippling like a field of strange wheat. Krekka gestured for the fighters to come together in the middle of the ring and shake hands. When they touched bare knuckles, the mutant's mane flared instantly upright like a spiky sail. The contest had three rounds. The first was contact optional, where the fighters could move, feint, and land open-handed blows whenever the opportunity presented itself. The second was contact mandatory. Each fighter could move at will, but had to match the other blow for blow or be disqualified. The last round was toe-to-toe, with no moving whatsoever. If one of the combatants shifted his feet as he struck, or was staggered as he and his opponent traded full power, forehand and backhand bitch slaps, the contest was over. The final round was always bloody, always ugly, and always a big crowd pleaser. This case was no different. A minute and a half into the third round, both fighters' faces were drenched in gore, numerous cuts on foreheads and cheekbones, their eyes swollen to slits. The bigger man seemed to have the upper hand. He was grinning a wide, bloody-toothed grin. He smacked the mutie on the side of the head and made the creature's mixed spittle and gore erupt in a pink mist. The mutie's mane sagged lifelessly. His eyes were dull and vacant.
It looked like he was going down. The giant cocked back his arm for the finishing blow. The sentient mane quickly sprang fully erect. When the giant's hand reached the target had moved. Juking his head, the mutant caught the giant by the wrist and gave a perfectly turned pull, using the bigger man's weight and momentum against him. The Norm lost his balance and stumbled forward.
Contest over.
Well, not quite, Millie.
As Krekka rushed up to declare the winner, the giant scrambled up from his knees. The rules were off the table. But before he could rise to his full height, the maned mutie landed a wicked, cracking elbow shot to the middle of his face, which sent the giant to the ground, hard on his butt. He sat there for an instant, fists clenched at his sides, face contorted, trying not to pass out. Trying and failing. He slumped to his back, his arms and legs spread wide, his mouth drooping open and drooling blood.
You suck!
The two other matches that followed were cut from the same melodramatic cloth. Powerful fighters, lots of blood, sore losers. In the last bout, the sore loser chased the winner out of the tent, swinging a length of heavy chain. Ryan hardly noticed. His attention was elsewhere. Whenever a roustabout came or went, he tracked him or her to see what was being carried. Whenever a trailer moved in or out, he watched it closely. So far, almost everything that had come into the tent had gone out again. The only trailer that hadn't moved sat on the other side of the center ring. It had been there in the same spot when the companions had entered the tent, an oblong box on a wheeled bed with a facing mirror wall on which was painted a mural of pre-dark circus scenes. When the competition ended, the carny master announced the next act.
My friends, prepare yourselves to witness the strangest thing you will ever see. Something so unusual and so startling that I guarantee you will never forget it as long as you live. Roll in, Balduna!
The cage containing the two-headed Scaly was dragged on its trailer into the center ring. When it was in position, one of the moving crew tossed Krekka a long metal-tipped pike, and he used it to viciously prod the great lump of scale-covered flab.
Bastard fat, isn't it? And if you're all wondering how it got that way, you're about to find out. Bring in his dinner!
Two workers trotted in a half-grown pig that weighed roughly 100 pounds. It walked like a dog beside them, with a long coiled leash of rope around its neck. The men used some kind of white grease from a tub to coat the pig's body head to foot. Then they tied the end of the rope to a stake. When they walked away, the pig tried to follow them, but was brought up short by the end of the rope.
Now, I don't want any of you to panic when we let out the Scaly. Pig is its favorite food, so it won't pay you any mind until it's done. And there's another thing. Old Balduna knows there's a time limit.
Two rousties carried what looked like a giant stopwatch to the tent pole and hung it from a hook for all to see. Obviously pre-dark, it had a black minute hand and a thin red hand that counted the seconds.
Balduna has to catch and eat as much of the pig as he can before the clock's alarm goes off. Once the bell starts ringing, it knows it either steps away from the carcass or it gets the shit kicked out of it by my rousties.
One of the crew very carefully opened the Scaly's cage door, and the carny master started the time clock. The obese mutant pursued the greased but tethered pig around the center ring. The act's opening antics were undeniably comical, but once Balduna got a firm grip on the animal's left rear hock, things quickly took a turn for the worse. Some things are simply harder to watch than others. Balduna ate the pig from the feet up, its adult head attacking at the front, baby head working on the rear. Both mutant mouths gobbled for all they were worth. The pig didn't stop shrieking until the adult head bit out its heart. When Ryan looked over at his son, Dean was shielding the little girl's face against his chest, a gentle hand resting on her slender shoulder. The boy wasn't looking at the macabre spectacle. He was glaring at the Carney Master. A look that Ryan knew well. It was his look. His legacy. Cold fire. The two-headed Scaly, its faces, necks, and massive, flabby chest smeared with gore, was threatened back into its cage by four workers with clubs and the ringleader with his long prod. As Balduna was rolled out, it gripped the bars in both hands and belched sonorously in defiance. Then another tarp-covered cage was rolled in.
You all have heard the legend of the Wazzlebird. A ferocious, muty strain found only in the darkest, grimmest mires of Deathlands. Half crocodile, half condor. All chiller. The legend says the Wazzle can't be tamed, can't be taught, can't be defeated. It lives only for the joys of tearing apart living flesh and drinking living blood. It drops out of the night sky like a meteor and takes the unwary from behind with talons and teeth. It is my honor and privilege, dear Bulletville, to present to you the Wazzle!
Tekka flew back the tarp, exposing a pair of huge, featherless bird creatures. Their bodies and wings were covered with thin, well-tanned leather. Their long, straight reptilian beaks were lined with tight rows of serrated teeth. Their tri-talons black and curving like great fish hooks. As the two creatures took in the crowd and its fear, their eyes were full of savagery and insane fury. A moment later, a large, strangely attired figure stepped into the center ring. A steel mesh fencing mask concealed the man's face and head. His body was protected by chainmail, his hands and arms by mesh gauntlets. He wore a monumental black codpiece strapped to his hips. Six roustabouts used long metal poles to pin the Wazzles against the bars. The bird's screams of outrage drowned out the music and made many of the villagers cover their ears with their hands. Once the Wazzles were securely pinned, the cage door was opened and the man in the steel suit stepped inside. The muty birds wanted him. They snapped their beaks and hissed in bloodlust. The man bent, spread his arms, and took hold of the bird's ankles, trapping both feet of both birds in his gauntleted hands. The Wazzles didn't like that one bit, and it was all the roustabouts could do to keep them hard against the bars.
Are you ready?
The man in the cage nodded.
Then fly!
The instant the Rousties let off with their prods, the two mutant avians exploded out the open cage door, their long leathery wings snapping like unfurled sails caught in a shifting gale. Behind them came the man, out of the cage and into the air. Chaos erupted inside the carny tent. Dragged down by their 200-pound burden, they flew low and fast, circling the walls of the tent. The man's heels, as he was carried aloft, grazed the heads of the stunned spectators. People screwed and threw themselves flat on the ground. The birds beat the air, raising clouds of dust. As they flew, they tried to bite their rider, cocking their heads this way and that, looking for an opening to wound, to maim, to chill. The gauntlets protected the man's hands and arms, and the birds couldn't get at his head and continue to fly. Their instinct to fly away was stronger than their need to be rid of him. Around and around, the three of them circled. Ryan marveled at the man's grip strength and stamina. They were all that kept the Wazzles from feasting on the audience. Gradually, the birds' frantic, sweeping spirals grew narrower and dropped in altitude. Their cries became desperate and despairing. As the man was borne around, his boot heels cut furrows in the dirt. When the Wazzles were finally exhausted, they just dropped from the air, crash landing in the center ring. The man took a hard landing too, bouncing forward on his face and chest. He didn't loosen his grip though. Before the Wazzles could recover from the impact, a dozen roustabouts set upon them with long poles and ropes, trussing their beaks and legs together, then carrying them on the poles back to their cage. Their rider removed his steel mask and took a low bow. The crowd jumped to its feet. Amid the tumult, something on the far side of the center ring caught Ryan's eye. It flashed behind the mirror wall of the facing trailer. For a fraction of a second, the silver reflective glass became vaguely, hazily transparent, as though through a pall of oily brown smoke. Then it was over. In that frozen moment, Ryan glimpsed a ghostly figure whose image was burned deep into his brain. Spindly-limbed, slouching, menacing. Even if he hadn't seen the glare of the light on the steel, he would have known who it was. The motherfucking Magus.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.